Morning, everybody. Welcome to Masechtas Erchin. Erchin is next of our projects. We have seven Masechtas to go. Right?
After this.
Seven Masechtas to go until we finish Shaf. So, which is a bit of a misnomer because we have all those Mishnahs which we haven't done. But okay. In terms of the Tam Vavli, we will have concluded, we'll have completed. And okay, let's get right underway. Erchin, at least the first parak deals with the mitzvah of Erech. I'll explain it in just a moment. And it comes out to a total of 9 prakim. Okay, basically Erechin, if I can make one summary statement about Erechin, it's basically parak of Zion of Vayikra. Meaning over the course of this limud, it's not that long, it's a month. 34 blot. It's going to be about a month limud, and it basically is dedicated to the 27th perek of Vayikra. It's the final perek of Vayikra. Right, the Torah goes through a bit of tochacha, small in relationship to the tochacha that's mentioned in Parshas Kisavo, and then at the end of the tochacha, the Torah then goes back into mitzvahs, and the Torah touches on a couple of mitzvahs. One of the mitzvahs that the Torah mentions is the mitzvah of Maaseh Behema. Well, that we covered already because that fell out in the end of Bechoros. That was the 9th parak of Bechoros. Another mitzvah that's touched upon at the end of Parshas Bechukosai is the mitzvah of Temura, but that we have its own mesechta too. But there's a series of other mitzvahs that are mentioned in this parak of Zayin of Bechukosai, not mentioned anywhere else in Chumash, and that is going to be the topic of discussion throughout our mesechta. The first mitzvah mentioned in parak of Zayin is the mitzvah of Erechin. And I read. I'm reading from Chumash right now. If a person is mafli neder, mafli, you'll see that word every time when it talks about articulating any type of vow, and the person is basically committing himself. The word mafli usually means articulation, meaning that it is clear exactly what the person wants and wants to donate, and he's yafli neder be'erkecha nefasha l'Hashem, and he makes a neder. Now, we're going to see very often the words neder and erkecha are sometimes interchangeable, but in our Mishnah, we're going to make it very clear, hopefully, that they're not exactly the same. Now, as we go through the Mishnah, I'll explain the precise difference. What's the difference between neder versus an erech? V'haya erkecha, I'm reading on, v'haya erkecha zachar mi-ben 20 shana v'ad ben 60 shana, v'haya erkecha chamishim shekel kesef v'shel kol ha-kodesh. And the Torah basically says like this. If you want to donate the erech of anybody, of somebody, so basically, you're going to look at 2 factors. Number one, you're going to look at gender, male versus female. And then you're going to look at age. Okay, it almost sounds like, you know, when you get your life insurance quotes. Okay, but that's it, though. In other words, those are the only 2 factors that are in consideration. It's gender and it's age. The Torah starts off with the most a person's going to have to pay, and the most is going to be for a male between 20 to 60 years of age. So if you donate the erech of such an individual, that comes out to 50 shkalim. 50 shkalim. Sorry. Yep. As of recently, I've been very busy with the phone, but it shouldn't be on now. Okay. The 50 shkalim are the 50 shkalim are the is the most that a person's going to pay. 50 shkalim, just to give you a sense, an idea of how much that is, it's a lot of money. Meaning 50 shkalim is 200 zuz. Okay, I don't know if that helps. 50 shkalim is 200 zuz. 200 zuz is the amount that a person has to commit himself for iksuva. In other words, in a situation of iksuva payment, when a man marries a woman, it's a regular, you know, regular marriage, she's a basula, so the amount that he has to commit himself to her is 200 zuz, 50 shkalim. So and that's the kind of money necessary in order for him to think twice before he divorces her. So, and obviously, the point is that it's a significant amount of money, right? I've heard elsewhere say that it's basically the amount a person earns over the course of 1 year, something along those lines. Okay, so, all right, it's a
$100,000?
No. I don't know. The imnekeva hiv ayayar kachash l'shim shakal. Now, if it's a female between the age of 20 and 60, so it's 30 shkalim. Yeah?
Half?
No, not half.
I mean, almost.
Three-fifths.
Okay. That's all she's
worth. Yeah, well, you're going to see in just a moment that she devalues considerably less than men do. The Gemara is going to make that comment later on. It's coming up soon. I forgot where it is exactly. But you're going to see as we go through the numbers that when a man goes over 60, so his value plummets, right? and the woman, on the other hand,
just a little bit,
right? Just a little bit of a drop off. Okay, and the Gemara is going to ask the question. Well, you wait till you get to the answer. You're going to love it. The Gemara is going to ask the question. Well, how come the man plummets? You'll see. I don't even know if you have to ask it, but you'll see. The Gemara is going to ask that question. Now, from 5 to 20, so for a man, it's going to be 20 shkalim, and for a woman, it's going to be 10 shkalim. From 1 month until 5 years, so the erich is going to be, for the male, 5 shekel of kasef. Okay, so it's a funny progression of the psukim. If you're following, we started from the 20 to 60 range. We then go down in age from the 5 to 20. We then go down from the 1 month to the 5 years of age. And now the Torah is going to go in the other direction. V'imi ben shishim shana v'mala, and from 60 and above, im zachar v'yekacha chamisha asar shekel. The man went from 50, and once he turns 60 years of age, he goes down to 15. Well, in the keva, asar shkam, the woman goes 10. But the woman went from 30 down to 10. And the man goes from 50 down to 15. Okay. No, no.
One-third.
Right.
The woman and the man is
a little bit over.
Three times 15 is 45.
So it's a quarter.
No, it's not.
I'm sorry. I'm going from 60. Okay. The imachum erkecha vehimidu lifnei akon ve'erichos akon api asher tasig yado hanoder yarichenu akon. And finally, the end of this parsha deals with what if the person's poor, meaning he makes an erich value and now he has to give. And as I explained earlier, you're talking about a considerable amount of money, especially if it's a male between the age of 20 and 60. Now he's on the hook for 50 shkalim. And what if he's poor? So the Torah says, so he'll get a special consideration. He'll get an appraisal by the Kohen, and an appraisal by the Kohen will determine and establish how much he can actually pay. And this is the Parsha of Erchin, found in the beginning of Perek Chav Zayin, the Mishnah. Hakol ma'arichin v'ne'erachin. So the Mishnah starts off with a very global term of hakol. Hakol means everybody. Everybody is marich v'nerach. Marich means that you're the one who's making the erech neder, and nerach means you're the object of the erech neder. So everyone could be on both sides of this coin. You could either be the marich, meaning the one making the neder, or the nerach, the one being the object of the neder. Meaning, look, when I make an erech neder, I don't necessarily have to make it about myself. I could. Meaning, I'm going to give my erech to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so I'm a man between 20 and 60 years of age. So therefore, that means I'm on the hook for 50. Or if I'd like, I could say I'm going to give the erech of Dr. Zagi. Okay, man between the age of 20 and 60, same story. Okay, good. So in other words, so I could be on the marech side, so anybody could be marech, meaning it could be a man, it could be a woman. And the Mishnah says the word hakol, obviously we're including somebody else. Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to talk about who else we're including. Okay, on the nerach side, on the one who's being the object of the erech neder, so again, same story, everybody. Okay, and again, we'll talk about who everybody is. Then the Mishnah goes on to say, nodrin v'nidarin. Now, nodrin v'nidarin is basically the same, but there's a fundamental difference. When we talk about neder here in the context of this Mishnah, as opposed to erech, erech is a fixed amount, based on just simply gender and age. And that's it. When it comes to neder, neder is market value. Okay? People have market values? What, I mean, can we actually talk about the value of a person? Yeah, sure. Sure. Because everybody does have a market value. Now, Baruch Hashem, no one here is going to be sold on the slave market, but if anybody was sold on the slave market, there would be a value. And that's going to be basically based on of what your physical capabilities are. How strong you are, how healthy you are, what your age is, what your skill set would be. Meaning people do have a market value. Okay. So when I say I'm going to give somebody, I'm going to make a neder of his value. Neder demei alai. His value is going to be upon me. So now we no longer look to the parsha of Bechukosai. We no longer look at the erech evaluations. But basically now we figure out how much would you go for the on the open market. Okay, I'm sure it'd be very humbling to find out how much I would go on the open market. But that's neder. That's noder v'nidar. And again, it's the same story. Noder is the one making the neder. Nidar is the one who's the object of this neder. So hakol, so everybody's including that as well. Okay. Again, stay tuned because the Gemara is going to wonder what's with the big terminology of hakol. Everybody, who's everybody? Kohanim, Levim, Yisrael, Nashim, Avadim, Tum, Tamban, Jargonos. Now the Mishnah goes and gives examples, meaning who is included in this. So we start with a Kohen, we go to a Levi, we go to Yisrael. Makes perfect sense. Meaning, essentially, even though they are divided in other areas of halacha, Kohen versus Levi, Levi versus Yisrael, in the world of Erech, same story. We'll get to Evan in just a moment, but no, hold on 1 second. I'll get to Evan in just a second. But in other words, Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, all same. Nashim, same story, meaning there's no difference between Erech. Obviously, the amount is going to be different, but in terms of the mitzvah of Erechin, women are included as men are. In the mitzvah of Neder, Demei, women are included as men are. Avadim, this is an interesting one. Now, Eved over here, talking about an Eved, an Eved Kanani. Okay. Yeah. Now. Eved Ivri is a Jew. Eved Ivri is a Jew. So an Eved Kanani. Okay, that's going to be interesting. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Tumtum v'androgynous nojum v'nidarinu ma'arichin avalo ne'arachin. Okay. Now we get to our gender-confused crowd. Right, the tumtum we don't know because there is something covering the makom ha'erva. Androgynous is somebody who's demonstrating both male and female gender. And so, nojim v'nidarin. So in the world of neder or nidar, fine. Meaning, because that is just a strict market value issue. Meaning, they do have a market value. Whatever it may be. Or for, in terms of being the noder, the one making the neder, look, they're, in other words, they're Jew. Right? May not know how to identify gender, it's a he, it's a she, it's maybe a little bit of both. But in terms of obligation of mitzvahs, they're just as obligated, so they can make a neder. They could be the object of a neder. They could be ma'arich, they can actually make an erech value, an erech pledge, but they can't be the object of an erech value. So in other words, if I have a friend who is an androgynous, and I say, I want to give, now I'm not going to know how to say this, his erech or her erech or something in between, but I can't. Why not? Because not a specific gender. Says the Mishnah, in order to be the object of an erech neder, you have to either be definitively a man or definitively a woman. The androgynous is not definitively either, and so therefore not subject for an erech value. He can't do his own. He could do somebody else's.
No, he can't
do his own. Right. Now, cheresh or tevekatan, these are all people who do not have das. Cheresh, the deaf mute. Shota is someone who's clinically deranged. Katan is a minor. So they can be the object of neder and erech. Okay. They do have a market value. They do have a erech value, because erech value is only dependent on age and gender. Okay. Avalo nojin velo ma'arichin, but they can't be the ones doing the neder. They can't be the ones making the neder. Mibnei shein b'em das. And the Mishnah spells it out. It's self-evident. They don't have das, and therefore they don't, because they don't have dat. So consequently they are going to be off the hook. Let's go back for off the hook. I mean, they're not chayvin the mitzvahs to begin with. Okay, let's go back for a moment just to Eved. Okay? Eved, right, if you saw, I paused for just a moment. Let's come back to Eved for just a second. Eved Kanani, says the Mishnah, is included in the story of making an Erech pledge, being the object of an erech pledge, making a neder, being the object of a neder, right? Eved Kenani. Okay, let's for a moment talk about our Eved Kenani. Okay, who is the Eved Kenani? Eved Kenani is somebody who is a non-Jew who was purchased by a Jew as a slave. Okay? And, well, that's one issue. That's one issue. We've spoken about this many times before, but it's always good to go over. It's good basic information to understand in terms, whenever we have the conversation of an Eved Kenani. Eved Kenani is somebody who is kind of a Jew, right? Somewhere in between. He's like almost like a twilight zone. He's like in a limbo world of whether he's a Jew or whether he's not a Jew. Okay. When a person becomes an Eved Kenani, so did you know? First of all, if it's a male, he has to get a bris milah. If it's a female, obviously not. But both of them have to tov on the mikvah. Right? Interesting. Right? So when you purchase an Eved Kenani, you have to tov on them in the mikvah. And they're going to be obligated in all mitzvahs of the Torah that a woman is going to be obligated in. Okay. So they are... No. Bris being the exception, correct. Right? They are quasi-Jewish. Now, I don't say they're fully Jewish, and that's reflected very easily by the fact that they're not allowed to marry a Jew. Jews not allowed to marry an Eved Kenani. Jewish woman's not allowed to marry a... Right, an Eved Kenani. Okay, there's one exception. Okay, but this takes us to places that we don't want to go right now. An Eved Ivri is allowed to marry Shivcha Kenanis. Okay, but that's a unique story and under certain circumstances. And okay, so basically, how is this going to work right now? Meaning, so he's kind of obligated in mitzvahs. He's kind of Jewish, and the Mishnah says that he can make an erech value. And he could be the object of an erech value. He can make a neder, and he could be the object of a neder. Now, right? I guess we get to the practical issue. He doesn't have money, right? The man has no money, and kol shekana eved kana rabo, right? Anything he picks up automatically goes to his master. So he has no money. So Rashi over here says. Right? Rashi writes mesham malachas makish and esgarshai isha o nishtachra haeved. So when the Eved goes free, right, and Rashi says the same thing by a woman as well, because same story by a woman, all her earnings and all her findings go to her husband, although it's not the same relationship, right? Woman can own assets. It's not the same. But still, the basic idea is that when the Eved goes free, so at that point in time, now he's going to be obligated to pay. Tosfos gives another scenario. Take a look at the second Tosfos on the Amud. Tosfos says, Mashum la'achas makish nizgasha ishosh nishachra ha'eved, Cain perish a conscious inami kigon shenasno lahem amenasha in larav labal rishus bahen. Okay, and then Tosfos points out, and you'll see this idea a number of times throughout Shas, that it is possible to give a gift to an eved or to a woman restricted to her husband or to his master, respectively, and it would be possible for an eved to gain assets. So it is possible even as an eved to have money and to therefore make an erech value. You stipulate. With a stipulation,
you say, I'm giving you this on condition that it's yours and not yours.
Right, with a stipulation.
No, correct.
You're absolutely correct. You can give the Eved a limited gift. Okay, good. That's the Mishnah. And that covers now all the cases of the Mishnah. Now, we're going to do today and tomorrow the Hakol discussion. Right? You look at the first word of the Mishnah, the first word of the Masechta, it says Hakol, everybody. And you know, it comes up a number of times throughout Shas, the Mishnayos use this kind of language all the time. Whenever you see the word Hakol, it is always an inclusive term. Meaning, basically, what the Mishnah is trying to do is intimate and hint to us that not just the people mentioned the Mishnah, but others as well. People who you may not have thought to be included in this list of who is involved in Erech and Ne'erach and Noder and Nidar, who you may have thought to be excluded but are really included, and that's all coming from the word Hakol. The Gemara is going to understand that the Hakol is going on everybody in the Mishnah. When I say everybody, I mean the Marich, the Ne'erach, the Noder, the Nidar. It's going on all four of those scenarios. Let's start with the Gemara. Hakol ma'arichim lasui emai. So when we say hakol ma'arichim, who can make an erech neder? So the Gemara says everybody, and everybody includes mufla samach leish. It's including somebody who is close to bar mitzvah. Okay? Mufla samach leish, close to bar mitzvah. Now we know, that a person's only obligated in mitzvah once he becomes a bar mitzvah. Right? Halacha Moshe Misinai, 13 years and a day, plus shtei sa'aris, physical maturity. Then and only then is the person going to be obligated in the mitzvah satorah. Anytime before that, it's just simply a mitzvah of chinuch. There's only a chinuch obligation. Machlokas amongst the Rishonim is the obligation primarily on the father, is the obligation also upon the child as well. Okay, but there is a chinuch obligation, but whatever, however you want to frame it, it's midrabbanan, it's rabbinic. But min haTorah, a katan is going to be exempt from all mitzvahs, except the mitzvah of making a neder. In the world of making a neder, you can have, if it's a precocious child, now precocious doesn't mean they have to be brilliant. In fact, I'll show you Rashi in just a moment. He has to have just a limited amount of understanding. So we'll go through Rashi in just a second. But in the world of neder, if you have somebody who is on the cusp of being a 13-year-old, and he shows that he has some sort of understanding, so his neder is a neder. His erech is an erech. Take a look at Rashi, the first Rashi on the Gemara. Ben yud beishan of yamecha, shu samach li'ish. Ve'eno ish ad shi'avi shtei sa'aros. So Rashi points out that you're not a man until you are 13 years of age plus physical maturity. Umufla karile. Now, this 12-year-old, now, it seems from Rashi, okay, I don't have another source for you right now, but right now we'll just stay with Rashi. It seems from Rashi that the only time that you are eligible to be in this category of mufla samach leish is only from 12 and above. And then conversely, I would guess that for a girl it would be from 11 and above, but... Oh, good. Where is it?
Right on the side.
Oh, good. Good, perfect. Okay, excellent. So, Ashi Avishtesar is a mufla karile al shem shaboken osom. And what does that mean, mufla means? Mufla means we give him a simple test, continues Rashi. And he says, Im yodea lahaflos alafarish l'shem mi nadar, ul'shem mi higdish, kedekani beperik yosidofen, memaseches nida. And you ask him a simple question. You're making an erich evaluation. Who is it for? You're making a neder. Who is that for? So he's going to answer HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If he's able to answer that, if he understands that. Now, to what degree he has to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Look, our understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu also is limited. So I don't know to what degree he needs to understand, but just a basic understanding of God. And at that point in time now, his neder is a neder, his erech is an erech. So the first person that we're coming to include is going to be the mufla samach leish, the 12-year-old.
He's going to pay when he gets my mitzvah money.
And from his right, exactly. I guess right. We go back to the discussion of that Rashi Tosos of Edvin and Isha. Where is the money coming from?
But I think is there a time limit as to when they're supposed to fulfill this, or you can wait till it becomes an adult?
We'll talk later on the Masechta about the Baal Te'acher. In other words, by regular neder, right? You have you're on the clock in terms of how long if you have a pledge, how quickly you have to pay it. No, one of the first discussions in Rosh Hashanah.
But when they do an Erev, there's a time limit for that?
I'm unclear about that.
Because if there's no time limit,
he
can just wait until
he
becomes an adult.
He doesn't know when he's going
to. Right.
I thought that a kohen can be with Kabbalah Kenyan, but he can't give one.
His ability to make Kenyanim works mid the Rabbanan, right? But on a Torah level, he can't make a Kenyan. You need Das to make a Kenyan, and it's interesting. Over here, for Neder, the threshold... Right, the age comes down. Right, does that mean also he can make kinyanim as well? I don't think so. From a Torah standpoint, I'm not sure. I don't think so. Right, maker dinecham father's not chayev, and so again midrabanan he acquires everything. In other words, the chachamim basically said that a 7, 8, 9-year-old can make kinyanim. But that all works midrabbanan. So that, I guess you can make the argument that his earnings that are his now midrabbanan can be used to pay his daraisa obligation. Yeah, okay, I'm right. I think it's reasonable. It sounds reasonable. Okay, next. Okay, so that was point number one of the Mishnah. That explained Hakol Ma'arichin. Now we go on to the next part of the Mishnah, Hakol Ne'arachin. Everyone could be the object of an Erech evaluation. Lasuye, my Lasuye, Menuvo Mukashchin. Let's say the person is physically deformed, physically just really repulsive. Now, I know beauty is only skin deep, and I understand that the man has a neshama and the woman has a neshama, and you really can't put a value on the individual, but, okay, and you saw that one coming, but that person does not have a market value. Meaning, try to sell somebody like that on the market, and no one's going to want to buy that individual. So that individual who is a menuvo mukashchin, someone who's just physically grotesque, does not have a market value. You could have made the argument that if he's not in the world of neder, well, he's not also in the world of erech as well. The Havamin is actually based on the Pasuk, right? I went through the Pasuk at the beginning of this morning. The Torah says, Ish kiafli neder be'erkecha. You see how the Torah puts together the word neder and erech. So you might have thought, if you're in the Parsh of Nedarim, you're also in the Parsh of Erech. And if you're not in the Parsh of Neder, you're not in the Parsh of Erechin. Because the Mukashchin doesn't have a market value, so therefore he's not in the Parsh of Erech. That's what all a Havamina. And what's the conclusion? Read on in the Torah. Because the Torah says the words nifashos. What's nefashos telling you? That as long as you have a nefesh, you're in the parsha of erechin. Our mukashchin, our menuval, is in the parsha of erech. Has a nefesh. Okay, next. Nodrin. We're moving on in the Mishnah. This is now the third hakol of the Mishnah. Nodrin lasui amai nidar nifstarichle. So the Gemara says, you're right. Nobody's included in the world of neder, meaning because we've already included everybody. The Mufla Samach L'Ish is already included. The Mukashchim and Nuval doesn't have, is, for, as far as Noder is concerned, I mean, he's a Jew like everybody else. Of course he can make a Neder. So everyone's included. Nidar and Lasui Yemai, so we move on now. Nidar. In other words, Noder is a setup for Nidar. Ila Sui Tumtum Vajokanus Vajokatani Lai. So the Gemara says, well, who's the object of a Neder? If you want to tell me that we're including Tum Tum Vajoganus, that's in the Mishnah. The Chereshot Vekatan crowd is also in the Mishnah. How about somebody who's less than 1 month old? That's coming up later on in the Mishnayos. How about a Naju? That's also coming up later on in the Mishnayos. So the Gemara says, La'olam L'suyi Pachus Meben Chodesh V'Utni. So the Gemara says it's talking about someone who's under a month old. Somebody who is under a month old, right? I have one of those now in my house, right? Somebody who's under a month old is not in the Parsha of Erechin, simply because when the Torah goes through the age brackets, so your youngest age bracket is from 5 years of age down to a month. Anything less than a month is not in the Parsha of Erech. Market value? Sure. Absolutely. Sure has a market value. Okay, right. So yes to market value. So what the Gemara now explains is that when the Mishnah says Hakol and the Mishnah is talking about Nidar, it's including somebody who's under a month old. Now it's true that that's the Mishnah later on, and it's not like the Mishnah is hinting to us, but it's like almost like the Mishnah is foreshadowing. Like get ready for a Mishnah later on, because the Mishnah later on will tell us that that the infant who is under a month old, although not in the Parsha of Erechin, is in the Parsha of Nidar, can be the object of a Neder. So, V'tini v'had mefarish. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi also goes through another Peshat as well, in terms of how to understand this line of the Gemara, but we're going to go on in the meantime. Hakol somchem lasuye mai. Now, the Hakols, okay, found throughout Shas. So, for example, there is a line in the Mishnah that says, Hakol Somchin. Everybody could do smicha. Who's everybody? Now, the mitzvah of smicha, we know. We went through Zvachim, right? We saw it in Menachos as well. It's simply the owner of a carbon taking his hands and applying force to the head of the animal prior to the shechting of his carbon. So, Lasuya Yare Shudolokar of Yehuda. Okay? Who's the Hakol coming to include? Someone who inherits a carbon. Father dedicated an animal as a carbon and Rachman Litzlan, but dad dies. And now the estate goes over to his son, and part of the estate is a karban. The son still has an obligation to bring the karban, and according to most opinions, except for Rabbi Yehuda, the son also has a mitzvah opportunity of doing the mitzvah of smicha. Basically, we look at the son as a fill-in for the father. The son is a yoresh, meaning he didn't acquire the animal, he inherited the animal, and so essentially now the son could do the mitzvah of smicha. Hakol ma'mirim lasui emai. The Mishnah says that everyone can be meimir, everyone can affect temura. My lasui yoresh look Rabbi Yehuda. Once again, it's coming to include the yoresh, unlike the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, d'tanya. And here we go now, a quick detour of the Gemara, machlokis between the Chacham and Rav Yehuda, whether Yorish can do the mitzvah smicha, whether Yorish can do temura. Now by temura, I'm not going to use the word mitzvah, it's not a mitzvah. Temura is a funny thing. Temura, we'll spend an entire mesechta learning about it. Temura, the Torah says, don't do it. But if you do, it works. Right? The first two, I think more, three blot of mesechta temura is dedicated to this topic of discussion of, do we have another situation in the Torah where the Torah says, don't do it, but if you do it, it works? Okay, that's the Iavid Mahani. Okay, the first discussion of the Gemara and Temura. So in the meantime, however, so for our purposes, we're just going to have a very limited discussion, it's really a digression, of the Gemara. Can your Yoresh, the one who inherits the carbon of his father, can he do the mitzvah of smicha, and can he affect temura with an animal that he inherited from his father? With a karban, I should say, that he inherited from his father. D'tanya. Yorish shomech, yorish meimer. The Tanakhama is of the opinion that the yorish can do both smicha and temura. Rav Yehuda omer, yorish eno shomech, yorish eno meimer. And Rav Yehuda says no to both. My time is Rav Yehuda, karban novelo, karban aviv, v'yalev tchilas hekdesh, misof hekdesh. Rav Yehuda says, look, when the Torah talks about the mitzvah of smicha, it says karbano, his karban, which means that it has to be possessive. It has to be your karban. If you inherit a karban, that's not yours. That's your father's. So there's no mitzvah of smicha by karban. And then Rav Yehuda says, well, that's what's called sof hekdesh. That's the end of hekdesh. And and temura is tchilas hekdesh, the beginning of hekdesh, because that is what is introducing kedusha to another animal. So masof hekdesh yorish eno samech av tchilas hekdesh eno meimer. If he's not involved in sof hekdesh, the end of the process, so he's not involved in the beginning of the process as well. V'rabana, now the chachamim obviously argue heimir yamir l'rabas is yorish. The double lashon by temura of heimir yamir. So v'yafin sof hekdesh mitchilas hekdesh matchilas hekdesh yorish meimer av sof hekdesh yorish samech. If a yorish can be involved in the mitzvah of temura, that means that he's also involved in the mitzvah smicha as well. V'rabbanan hai karbanom ha'avdilei. And now we go to our classic Gemara accounting. What does each do with the other's pasuk? So, mibayilei karbanovelo karbanovel kochavim, karbanovelo karban chavero, karbanovelo rabos kol balei chovrim l'smicha. In the first perek of Vayikra, it says the word karbano three times, making for us three drasha opportunities. Drasha number one. You do smicha only on a carbon of a Jew, not of a carbon of a non-Jew. We've said this many times. A non-Jew can bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, but no smicha. Smicha is only done for a carbon of a Jew. That's drasha number one. Drasha number two, carbon ovelo, carbon chavero. If, let's say, you're bringing the carbon of your friend, so it's not your carbon, it's your friend's carbon, you don't do the mitzvah of smicha, you only do it on your own carbon. Drasha number three, carbon ovelo, rabbis kol balei chovrim l'smicha. Where if you have a partnership over a carbon, which you can do, you can create a corporation over a carbon. A corporation, it's too fancy. Don't use the word corporation. Just simply say a partnership. Partnership, right? LLC. So, and you have a partnership over a carbon. Each one of the partners, each shareholder of the carbon has the mitzvah of smicha, meaning the Torah says karbano. Karbano means even if you're not sole proprietor of the carbon, even though you only have shares in the carbon, you still have the mitzvah to do smicha. Kol balei chovrim l'smicha. So, I'm sorry. So, Rabbi Yehuda. So, l'rabbis kol balei chovrim l'smicha le'islei. So, the Gemara says, first of all, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of that last drasha. So now that he doesn't hold that last drasha, he has now a drasha opportunity. What does he make of that drasha opportunity? Not the Yoresh. The Yoresh doesn't do the mitzvah of smicha. V'inami, or what we could do for Rabbi Yehuda in terms of accounting over here is islay over kocham v'chaver mechad kranavke. We can consolidate one of his drashas, meaning the idea of not doing smicha for the carbon of a non-Jew and not doing smicha for your friend's carbon, that could all be sourced out of one carbono, because it's basically the same idea, not yours. Meaning it's not your carbon, and so therefore, that puts the two drushas under one of the carbonos. You have another one, carbonovelo, l'rabbis kol bali chovrim l'smicha. Every shareholder is going to do the mitzvah of smicha, and now you have one more drasha, not the yoresh. Okay. A little more accounting to do. According to Rav Yehuda, what are you going to do with the Hemir Yamir, which according to the Chachamim, that was the inclusion of the Yaresh? It comes to include a woman. So how do I know that a woman is included in the Parsha of Temura? A woman can affect Temura. Interesting. I'm not sure why intuitively a woman would have been excluded. Now, right, in other words, the Gemara says, well, the Torah is only talking in Lashon Zachar. But the Torah talks in Lashon Zachar by other mitzvahs as well. And we know Tosus responds to this. See the second Tosus on the Amud? Lefisha kol ha'inyan inu v'dabri ala b'zol ha'shon zachar v'afak av d'chol ha'tor ha'kul ha'nami b'zol ha'shon zachar n'amra. Right? Tosus says, basically what I just asked, isn't all of the Torah written b'zol ha'shon zachar? And we never segregate, we never say, well, this is only written b'zol ha'shon zachar, so therefore women are not included. Meaning, we have other rules to tell us what mitzvahs women are exempt from, but the language that the Torah uses is not usually a guideline. Tosfos says, "Mikom makom, armini de itkesh isha leish lecholonshin, ava betemura, ilav kra, lo havye shave leish kedisa, hasam beperkama de temura." So Tosfos says, wait till we get to Masechta Temura, and we'll try to have a better understanding of why it is women would have been excluded. I don't remember the Gemara over there, so I'm also going to have to be patient, or I'll look it up right after today's daf. One of those two. I don't know. So anyway, so that's why. So I'm sorry. One more point, and then we finish with this digression. And what about the Chachamim? The Chachamim explain that women are included because of the extra word ve'im, and Rav Yehuda ve'im lo darish, and Rav Yehuda doesn't darshan the word ve'im. On this issue of Yarish, we go like the Chachamim, that the Yarish is included in Temura, is included in the mitzvah of Smicha. Correct.
Women also,
yeah. No, women is not even up for debate, meaning it's only a question of where we get the drasha from. But for women, though, women are included in both, in the mitzvah, right? On the issue of Smicha, that's a separate discussion, whether women can do Smicha or not. Rishus, meaning it's as an option, they can do it. Okay. Hakol chayavin besuka. Okay, and here we go. This is going to be very enjoyable. Because now what the Gemara is going to do is it's going to kind of get like stuck on this hakol. But it's a good stuck. Meaning we're going to go through a number of Mishnayos throughout Shas where the Mishnah uses the language of hakol. And we're going to explain who is it coming to include. So we start with the Mishnah in Sukkah. Hakol chayavin besuka. Everyone's obligated in Sukkah. Lasui yamai lasui kan sheno sarach limo. The person who's obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah is a child who no longer needs his mother. Now, what do you mean a child who no longer needs his mother? Everyone needs a mother. Rashi explains, you wake up in the middle of the night and you don't start screaming out for your mother. Okay? At that point in time now, you are at the stage where, from a chinuch standpoint, you're now obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah. Who argues with this, by the way? Anyone remember? Anyone who remember who argues with this? I'm only excited because I remember. The Beit Shammai. Beishamai argues, Beishamai says that even an infant is chayiv in the mitzvah of sukkah. Remember the story? The story is that one of Beishamai's daughters had a son, and they made him a little sukkah for the newborn. Okay. But obviously, that again, the shita's Beishamai, we don't possibly like Beishamai.
Just for him, they made it.
Yeah. No, I'm saying they made him a special sukkah for his daughter-in-law and the new infant.
Why?
But not for the daughter. I mean, she's not obligated in sukkah.
Why not the same sukkah that they
have? Right, they said broke a roof, I guess, because she wanted more privacy. Okay. Hakol chayavim belulav. Everyone's obligated in the mitzvah of lulav. Now, who's the hakol coming to include? Child's got to know how to shake. Now, every child knows how to shake. When we say no, knows how to shake, we mean, you know, in the proper way. Now, when I say proper way, you know, look around the room while everyone's shaking their lulav and everyone's doing it their own way. I mean, but at least everyone's got a way to do it, meaning, you know, they're right. It's, you know, there's some method to the madness of how to shake. It's not just simply, you know, smacking it up and down. No, in other words, we know these are mitzvahs asay. These are positive commandments. So we know women are not included. So, but the hakol is intimating to us that somebody else is included in this mitzvah. So who else? The child. How old does the child have to be? He has to know how to be menaneah. Denan kana yodel ananeah chay balulav. Hakol chayav in bitzitzis lasui emai. When it says everyone's obligated in tzitzis, who is that coming to include? Lasui kana yodel isateif. It's coming to include the child who knows the proper way to be misatif, to wrap himself up in the talis. Talit katan, it's a very long discussion. They didn't have talit katan back in the good old days.
Right.
In other words, the beged used to be a four-corner beged. I mean, that was the garment that they wore. And then, well, if once you had that beged on, so then you're obligated in the mitzvah of tzitzis. Right now, you know, the whole dress, the whole wardrobe has changed. So what we do is that we go out, and this has been an issue for centuries, so we go out of our way to make a beged that has four corners and therefore is obligated in tzitzis.
This is interesting, but this Ashkenazim don't do that.
Huh?
Ashkenazim don't do for katan, they don't do talit until they are married or whatever, right?
Correct.
But says that you should.
But again, in other words, you're never going to see terminology of talit gadol versus talit katan in the Gemara.
It's not for a shoulder.
They're talking about just in general.
In general,
to get a garment that has four corners on it in order to be chayv and tzitzis. Okay, take a look. There's a very interesting Tosfos over here. I'm not going to go through it together with you right now about the minhag of wearing the four corner garment in the time of the Rishonim. Okay, another time. Kana yodeli satev. Detayin kana yodeli satev chayv and tzitzis. Hakol chayv and tefillin. Everyone's obligated in the mitzvah of tefillin. Lasui yamai lasui kana yodeli shmor tefillin. A katan who knows how to safeguard his tefillin. Right? While wearing tefillin, you have to be in a state of kedusha. Right? The Rambam writes, the Shulchan Aruch writes, you can't be involved in idle chatter and you can't, in other words, you have to, so for sure, like, can't go to the bathroom, you can't pass gas. In other words, you have to be in a certain state when you're wearing your tefillin. So when the child arrives at that state, so he's obligated in tefillin, to tanya kani yodel shmor tefillin, aviv lokeach lo tefillin, so dad buys him a pair of tefillin. Tosfos over here, very interesting. Tosfos over here points out, if you read the Gemara carefully, by tzitzis, it didn't say dad had to buy a pair of tzitzis for his child. But when it comes to tefillin, it says dad has to buy a pair of tefillin for his child. But what's the difference? So Tosfos, aviv lokeach lo tefillin, v'gabit tzitzis lo naka lishna de lokeach de mistama talis, yeshlo. Right, and in terms of talis, that's your clothing, right? Back in the good old days, the clothing was a four-corner garment. So you don't have to say, Dad, you got to go out of your way to buy a four-corner garment. That's what he's wearing. And as far as the lulav is concerned, we also didn't use the language of buying. Tosfos says, V'gabi lulav nami yachol atzeis b'lulav shel aviv. You could use Dad's lulav. Okay? It's, you know, there are issues about giving it to a manyantav and then getting it back from him. Okay, but anyway, but there's a way to do it. Or Tosfos points out, tefillin's expensive. Meaning, you know, maybe you do have to buy a lulav, and maybe you do have to buy tzitzis. But relative to tefillin is just simply more expensive, and that's why the Braisa uses the language of lokeach lo tefillin. Hakol chayavin b'riya. Everybody's obligated in the mitzvah of riya. mitzvah of Re'iyah on the Gimel Regalim. You go up to Yerushalayim and you're seen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's the mitzvah of Re'iyah. There's also Karban Olah that goes together with that mitzvah. But first and foremost, to be seen. You got to be in the Azara. Now that comes to include even somebody who is a half of a Eved Kenani and a half of a free man. How did this person end up with a split personality? It's very simple. He was owned by two owners. And one of the owners released him in freedom. So now he's a chetzi chetzi. He's a half Eved and half Ben Chorin. And he's going to be obligated as well. Now, Ula Ravina Damar, Misha Chetzi Aved Vechetzi Ben Chorin Patur Min Ha-Re'iyah. Now, Ravina says that he's going to be exempt. Okay, so according to him, who's the Hakol coming to include? La Asuye Chiger Biyom Rishon V'Nispashet Biyom Sheni. The mitzvah of Re'iyah is only for someone who's ambulatory. If a person cannot walk, he's not obligated in the mitzvah of Re'iyah. I know that's a logical statement, but he has a legitimate patur. Let's say the person is lame on day one, but then makes a miraculous recovery for days 2 through 7 of Yontif. He's got to go. He now has a mitzvah of Ola of Re'iyah. Now, Hanich Laman Damer Kulin Tashlum and Zelaz Laman Damer Kulin Tashlum and Larishon Lasui Emai. Now, really, the mitzvah of Ola Re'iyah is day one of Yontif. And if you miss day one, you have a tashlum and you have makeup. When's your makeup dates? Anywhere from day 2 through day 7. How does a makeup date work? Is days 2 through 7 all makeup for day one? Meaning fundamentally, day one is the obligation. You miss day one, so then you have days 2 through 7 to make it up. But basically, it's all a makeup for day one. Or the Gemara says, it's like lumdus in the Gemara. Or the Gemara says, no, maybe each day is a makeup for the previous day. Meaning you miss day one, day two, you now have a new obligation. You miss day two, 3 can make up for day two. You miss day 3, 4 can make up for 3.
But
meaning
it's
each
obligation, it's not a makeup.
So I'll retract from my words. Not new obligation, but each one becomes a makeup for the previous day. So now, if that's true, if that's correct, so now you understand. The Gemara says that's two conceptual ways to look at how this makeup works. So if you were lame on day one, if days 2 through 7 are a makeup for day one, well, you were exempt on day one. You had a legitimate patur. So therefore, there's nothing to make up. If each one is a makeup for the day prior, if each day presents itself a new opportunity, not maybe not a new obligation, but a new opportunity to do this mitzvah of Re'iyah, so then even though you missed day one, but day two, you're not lame anymore. You need to go up.
What happens on Shavuos?
Shavuos, you still have Tashlumim. Even though it's not Yontif. Shavuos is very interesting. Shavuos, it's one day of Yontif, but it's still you still have Tashlumim. So Lasuye, Kulan Tashlum Larishon Lasuye Mai. If days 2 through 7 are makeups for day one, and you were lame on day one, which now means that you're not obligated, so what's the Hakol coming to include? Lasuye Suma Me'echas Me'inav. Somebody who's blind in one eye. Udaloki Aitana Detanya. Yochanan ben Dahavai Omer Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Suma Ba'achas Me'ina Potem Ena Re'iyah Shenemar Yera'e Yera'e. One Tana is of the opinion, his name is Rav Yochanan ben Dahavai, that in order to be obligated in this mitzvah of Re'iyah, you have to see out of both eyes, what we call in perception binocular vision. Kiderek Shabal Le'eros Kach Ba Le'eros Ma Le'eros B'Shteinav Af Le'eros B'Shteinav. Now, it's anthropomorphic. We really don't fully understand this, but just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees you with his two eyes, obviously we speak here in anthropomorphism. There is no corporality, okay, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's incorporeal. But, in other words, Kaviyachal, as we can understand it, right, like Rambam's language is L'shaber Saznayim, just so that we can just have some idea of what we're talking about, even though it's not. But just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees you with two eyes, So too, you must have binocular vision. You have to see out of your two eyes. So according to this Tana, if you're blind in one eye, you're exempt. The Mishnah of Hakol Chayav Beri'iyah would argue with this Tana. Okay. The Ibai Seimam.
Do you wear glasses?
That's binocular vision, just slightly impaired. I'd say that's okay. Now, what we could say is like this. Let's go back to the Ravina position. Ravina says your half is exempt. That could be the kakashlach to Ravina lokashe kan b'mishnah rishona kan b'mishnah achrona. So the Gemara says that no. Maybe even according to Ravina, he also would say that such an individual is obligated. But didn't he say he's exempt? He's straddling the fence of Mishnah Rishona and Mishnah Achrona. Nine. You'll understand what I mean in just a moment. A person who is a half-half, owned by two masters, one of them freed him. He's now a half-slave, half-free man. So Beisil's position originally was one day a week. One day he'll work for his master, the next day he'll work for himself. And so he'll split. So Beit Shammai says to Beis Hillel, tikantem es rabo, the es asmo lo tikantem. Look, that's great for his master. But what about himself? Meaning, you put him in a very bad position. Why? Lisa shivcha ina yachol, because he now can no longer marry a shivcha. Because he's now half a free man. And bas chorin ina yachol, and he can't marry a free woman because he's still half a slave. Yivatel, so what are you going to tell the man? Don't get married? That's unacceptable. V'halolo nivraha olam elo l'pirei v'rivya. The entire purpose of creation is p'ruvu. Now, I know I speak in such grand terms, but that's what the Gemara says. She'namar lo to'o bara lo shevet tzitzara. The Pasuk says in Yeshayahu that the world was created to be populated. Ela mimnei tikana olam, so therefore, because this situation is unacceptable, although unacceptable, by the way, not because of anything wrong with his status of being half-half. It's just he can't get married, and that's unacceptable. So what do? Kofen es rabba v'oso ben charen. So we force the hand of the master who still owns him, and we say to him, look, I'm really sorry, but you have no choice. You must free him. V'kosev shtar chatzi demei, and there's a buyout, meaning he has to now write a shtar over half of his value. And you'll find this every now and then, that Beis Hillel hears Beis Shammai and says, you know what, Beis Shammai? You're right. So in other words, there was a position originally where Beis Hillel was saying not to be freed, and then Beis Hillel, he listens to Beis Shammai and says, no, you know what, he's to be freed. So when Ravina says that this person's going to be exempt, that was following Mishnah Rishona, but then Mishnah Achrona, the position then adopted by Beis Hillel, so then Ravina says, you know what? He's obligated. Because basically when he's a half-half, because we know that the master is going to force, so we basically look at him right now as a free man. Okay. Pause over here. Obviously, we'll pick it up tomorrow. More discussion of hot calls.
There's no half a minute.
Through the entire day tomorrow.
The other one should make him a slave again.
No. Can't. Rabbi Hananya, but can't. Rabbi Hananya, but can't.